Welcome to Seeing the Full Picture, a podcast about systems thinking for health systems. This is a special podcast series from the Alliance for Health Policy and Systems Research. It was developed with the George Institute for Global Health.
Episode 1 is about the Alliance Foundations and Systems Thinking. Why then and what now? I'm Devaki Nambiar, and I'm a health policy and systems researcher working at the George Institute based out of Delhi in India.
Hi, my name's Stephen Dan. I'm co-director of health system science at the George Institute for Global Health in Australia, and I'm also a health economist by training. Before we start this episode, my co-host Devaki and I will just reflect on a few key aspects.
One of the things that struck me was that this whole area of systems thinking has been going on for decades outside the health sector. And it's really something that is taken off since the publication of some landmark reports, particularly by Tigrid Adam and Don DiSavigny a decade ago.
Stephen, my feeling is, you know, public health and increasingly health systems and policy research is a space that is truly multidisciplinary. So I think what was interesting for me was to understand the motivations and the relationships that led to trying to think of this as part of a scientific endeavor in the health systems space. Also, you know, you can hear in the voices, these are people who have worked together and have relationships with each other. And I think that's an important part also of understanding and acknowledging, you know, that the systems contain relationships and elements of trust and dependencies and trajectories across time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh, the one thing I did feel was a sense of inadequacy, because at one point during the discussion, I sort of felt that my training as an economist, as somebody who has a very reductionist view of the world, completely inadequate for dealing with some of the systems issues that they were sort of highlighting in their discussion. And I just feel like perhaps there's really an inadequacy in some of the training that some of us get as social scientists, economists, statisticians, epidemiologists, and perhaps there's much more scope for thinking in these broader terms in our syllabuses.
Yeah. You know, I've had the benefit of some training in anthropology and sociology, and perhaps these disciplines are sometimes at the risk of maybe becoming too vague, too ambiguous, and too sort of disconnected perhaps from the realities of the ground. You know, those are the challenges in those disciplines, but they really deal with complexity and nuance very well. And I think what I saw is an attempt among these speakers and these practitioners to kind of bring those two together, you know, with connecting the very real pragmatic challenges and issues with more complex ways of thinking, less reductionist ways of approaching problem solving in health, right? And so I think it's just kind of this attempt to strike the right balance. And what do you need in terms of the way that you think and the way that you act and the toolbox of methods you use to understand a problem? That gets you into that sweet spot, if you will, between these pillars.
Yeah, and the one thing I got from Aku was the importance of having to think this way in the policy context, in making policy decisions, that, you know, these aren't things that you negotiable. These are basically factors that have to be taken into account when making policy decisions.
Thanks for joining us wherever you are in the world to hear about systems thinking. And we've got three very distinguished guests with us today. We have Dr. Tigrid Adam and Professor Don DiSavigny, co-authors of a landmark publication that came out 10 years ago called Systems Thinking for Health Systems Strengthening. We've also got Aku Kwame, who's the technical officer for the Alliance for Health Policy and Systems Research. So it's great to have you all with us today, and thanks for joining us. We'll clarify the role of systems thinking, its application of systems research, its evolution over the last two decades, and why now is the time for systems thinking to have a resurgence. So can I now sort of pass over to Devaki to ask the first question?
Yes. So let's get straight into it, and we'll start with the basics. Many of us have read your report and your writing in this area, but for those that haven't, and even those that have, could you just start by telling us what is systems thinking? Don?
What is systems thinking? I mean, for all of us, I think we have different ways of talking about it. For me, it's really a discipline for making sense of the world around us, and particularly when we're in complex situations. And often that is the case, and certainly it's always the case when we're dealing with the health system, which is a complex adaptive system, as we all know. And we all have our roles in this system as actors, and we're often surprised by behavior of the system and behavior of stakeholders in the system. And I think we're seeing lots of that at the moment with the current pandemic around the world and how diverse and surprising everything is. This is often an example where we're not doing systems thinking. We're not standing back and looking at the whole system and appreciating that the system is in many ways determining its own behavior, that there are drivers, there are structures in the system that are more predictable than we think if we think about things differently. And so for me, it's a language and a discipline that makes us stand back and look at the whole, what I often say, end-to-end approach to the system. It's a way that brings discipline to how we think. It forces us to slow down and think about things differently. And it has a toolbox of methods to help us do that better, because sometimes it's not intuitive. Often it's counterintuitive because of the lags in the system, the feedback loops in the system, the history of the system, and so on. So I think we all frame it differently, but that's how I see it. And every time I counter work in a system, I always force myself not reduce it into the elements, but really try to stand and look at all the relationships, look at the whole system, look at all the stakeholders, and try to appreciate what's going on.
Tagreed, would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, I agree. It's the way of thinking. I don't think it's even worth trying to find a good definition. For me, it's an approach to thinking about problems. It's also an appreciation of the complexity of the situation. If we all appreciate how systems are complex, it's very hard to think linearly. You will be pushed to think in a dynamic way because we all interact. There is no way we can get it right without thinking of what might go wrong, what this intervention might do to other things, what could be unanticipated consequences. If we are programmed or used to think this way, there is no way we can go back to the linear way. For me, when it was clear, this is even for simpler interventions like promotion, prevention, or cure, some simple ones like the vaccination campaign, for example. It might sound so simple, but it actually can have so many effects from the health worker point of view, from the people point of view. So it's a way of thinking in my view. And then obviously it needs some skills. I'm a physician by training. And I can say that physicians like me, or even nurses and epidemiologists, we are trained to think of problems as individual, like we have a patient we have to worry about, or epidemiologists with clinical trials. But to take this step back and try to see the whole and understanding how we interact with each other is really the type of skills that are needed. I don't think it's something that is for a certain group of people or requires sophisticated knowledge. In fact, those of us who have children know that it's already a complex adaptive system already. So it's actually something that everyone can do. It's just a matter of accepting or adopting that way of thinking, and then things will evolve.
I think you really struck home on the idea of intuition and it being sort of a lens. Stephen, did you have a follow-up?
Just related to that, but just reflecting on what you're saying and thinking that my training in health economics, it seems to me the health economics is almost the antithesis of systems thinking. We're trained to think linearly. One of the terms that we often use in economic analysis is ceteris paribus, basically, all else being equal. We do this analysis and we hold everything else equal and we look at two or three variables of interest and see how they change things. And it is a real challenge for somebody with my training and background to really sort of turn things around to try to think in these sort of broad brush ways. And I suppose the advantage of the way in which economists work is that we're taking problems in bite-sized chunks and looking at these problems in isolation from everything else. But obviously, we're ignoring all the other things that are happening in the system around it and be really important. It was interesting the way you've sort of framed it, because it just triggered in my mind the complete opposite of the way we were trained to think as economists.
Thanks, Stephen. I'm trained as a social scientist. So for me, I find myself nodding vigorously and saying, finally, some validation of the sort of wicked lens that is used to understand societal and global problems, including in health and their interrelationships, right? So I think systems thinking is a way of trying to get at that. Akul, from your experience, how would you characterize systems thinking and your applications of it, perhaps?
Thanks so much, Debraki. And I would only add that, you know, one of my favorite analogies about systems thinking is, let's say you had a wristwatch and we took apart your wristwatch and spread it across the table. And so we broke it up and you took it apart. You had your spring, you had your battery, you had the face of the watch, the arms of the watch, and the wristband. Now, once you have taken it apart, do you still have a wristwatch? And no, you don't. What you have is you have a spring, you have a face, you have a battery. And what a lot of our science still does, and what a lot of our government systems still do, is very much value this breaking down into the components so that we develop very deep and very in-depth understandings of the components. But what we fail often to do is to really appreciate, once those components are brought together, it is their interactions, it is how they depend on one another that actually gives rise to the character that we see in the system, whether that system is a nation, whether it's an organization, or whether it's a health system. So I think moving us, many of us who have not been trained naturally in that way, but to think in feedback loops, to think in time, and to understand, you know, the coupling or the tripling of these effects of the components, whether they are people or whether they are other entities, how that actually gives rise to what we see in a system. And that helps us to then think a little bit differently about how we can intervene in that system.
Thank you. That's great. I really like the metaphor of the watch. And I think the first thing I was thinking is, you put a watch in front of different kinds of people, they will have different reactions to it as well. So there is the lens of the perceiver as well, right, with respect to systems. So I think that's a very powerful analogy to think about what we're talking about. So I wondered, bringing that kind of thinking into the domain of health and social development, have there been sort of definitional and practice-related challenges in applying systems thinking? Dawn, I was wondering if you had thoughts on that.
I think there's just been an absence in a way. I think, as Zachary said, we've all been trained to be linear, to be reductionist, whether we're in medicine or epidemiology or other disciplines. We've sort of grown up because the world pushes us in that direction. And I think it's a case of people not knowing about systems thinking or not being exposed to it in a formal or in a way that it's not just two words that are abstract. I think a lot of what I've experienced over the last 10 years or so since promoting systems thinking, I came late in life to appreciating systems thinking. I sort of learned about it on the fly and realized how powerful it was. And I wanted to share that with others. I haven't really come up against contested nature. It's more getting people to sort of slow down and put down their old approach and apply a new approach. And there's where I find that tools have been helpful. Giving someone a tool, they can start to feel they're a little more hands-on with the problem. I think it's a case of really spreading the discipline, creating the community of practitioners who can operate this way, who can speak a bit the same language. And I think we've started doing that with researchers. We need to do it more with policymakers, and we need to do it more with on-the-ground practitioners who still have not yet been exposed to the opportunity to apply this approach and to have some more than just the concepts, more than just the theory, but to have some way to actually do it and be in an environment where that's okay to do. I don't think there's sort of opposition to systems thinking. I think it's just a general lack of knowledge and practical experience with it.
Sagrith, what is your view on this? Definitional issues, applications?
When we were looking at the field, I think because it was not used enough at that time in health, we found different definitions. This is not system thinking. Is it complex systems? Is it complex adaptive systems? Is it system science? We did not think that this was helpful. And that's why I always like to think of it as an approach. It's thinking of the systems as all of this. It is a complex adaptive systems. So to me, trying to see what the definition is about is not really helpful. What I think I see as not really contesting, what I see as wave of complaints, let's say, in the literature, is every now and then you get these publications saying there is not enough applications. There is not enough applications in low and middle income countries. There is not enough applications in health. And I again don't find this, I mean, maybe it's true, but it's not a culprit. It's not the culprit, neither of system thinking, nor of the people around. What we need is one, awareness. Once you're aware of what you're dealing with and you understand simple things that all of us can relate to in examples in our life, you really find yourself pushed to look for tools. All what you need is to know that you need to look for something that can help you look for a feedback loop, which means when you intervene, something will happen and something else will happen and things will change. There is ripple effects all the time. So to me, I don't think it's a matter of really an issue with system thinking. It's maybe a perception that we need to move on from that and just really produce applications both in research and in real life.
Great. I've often reflected on that myself. Isn't this just about doing sound social science, the work soundly, right? Where you do want to look at unintended consequences. You do want to look at the whole. You do want to be comprehensive.
I think the idea is to accept that it's a multidisciplinary. It's not only social science. It's going to be a lot of other things, soft system methodologies, also health economics help, like system dynamic modeling can have a dynamic part of it. So I think the multidisciplinary nature of it is really what also people should embrace from the beginning.
Right. So systems thinking as transdisciplinary or multidisciplinary, I think.
Exactly. And that each of us can actually be like this. Wouldn't that be great? We can in ourselves be conversant and comfortable. We don't have to, in a study, you can always have the other people that support in making it a good research study. But if we can all have a good understanding of the different other disciplines we can tap on, that's really I think, a great reward as a researcher and as a practitioner as well.
But perhaps we can turn to sort of the way that the Alliance has approached it in their application. Stephen, I think you had some questions on that.
I just had a quick question. I just wanted to challenge you a little bit. And can I ask, is there a possible source of resistance to systems thinking, particularly in the policymaking field, that what it perhaps doesn't do is give you definitive answers to policy questions? And often the answers are very contingent. And I suppose one of the beauties of a reductionist approach is that it gives you perhaps simplistic, perhaps inaccurate, but they give you quantifiable, actionable answers. And I'm thinking particularly about health economics. Is that a fair criticism of, or a fair point of criticism for health systems research?
I agree that I've heard this comment often. And I think I haven't talked to a health policymaker who did not say they agree that the approach makes sense. It's useful, but they always have the but. But how can we use it? It's too long. It's very complex. It will take us ages to define something. How do we know how to look for unanticipated effects? So the resistance, I think, comes from how can we deal with this? And I think the more, I guess there are some examples that one can refer them to. But in my view, it's a matter, again, the same remark. If a policymaker really understands that you can't go without, this will vanish. This resistance will vanish. So whether we need to do better in sharing examples where how people manage, and we tried in the 2014 supplement in health research policy and systems that the Alliance was supporting. We tried to have many applications, and we made sure that it's not only research-related applications. There were several that were trying to strengthen the capacity of district managers or try to build capacity. So yeah, maybe we need to do more, but I'm sure Don has also other experiences with this here.
Well, I think that resistance, if you call it that, it's not so much resistance, it's that policymakers often just don't have time for research because of their constraints and time for horizons they work with. So we get sort of thrown in that same ballpark as we don't have time for research and evidence. We need an answer now. I think we see that playing out in the pandemic as well right now. A lot of the necessity, the reaction has been very, very linear and response reactive. You know, an event happens and you react as opposed to looking back at the whole thing. And I feel gratified to see is that as people are starting to think about building forward better, as the pandemic moves on and we go to this so-called new normal, people are actually now talking much more about system-wide approaches. And we have sort of the senior thinkers in international development actually advocating for systems thinking as we move forward. And maybe it takes this major global crisis to give an opportunity for this discipline to show its stuff as we work together across not just health, but all the other sectors who are going to need to be reinvented and redesigned, re-engineered as society actually tackles this problem. We can't do it in a reductionist way. So immediately, yes, you make these reactions in a very biomedical way. But afterwards, just the vaccine, for example, okay, we have the usual response of vaccine development, but the complexity of delivering this vaccine is going to force everyone now back into applying systems thinking in a much more overt way with policymakers all the way down to the field, to the community participation. So I think the timing was good. I regret really figuring out the importance of systems thinking so late in my career, 10, 20 years ago. And I wish I had knowing these things a lot earlier, I'm sure I would have done many things differently. And that's really why I spent the last 10 years or so in sort of academic settings trying to expose more people to the approach and methods. And so we've done that at the middle level, but not yet at the policymaker level. So I think there's a lot of learning to go forward. But I think this last 10 years has been really a good foundation to do that. I'm fairly optimistic that we're going to see this become much more mainstream now.
I did want to come in on this point and actually tie it into a few points that had been raised earlier about the issue of definition. So oftentimes when we've been speaking about systems approach, what we've actually meant, we've been talking about the six building blocks of health systems. And so if we have an intervention and we say, make sure you take a systems approach to that, what we've actually been saying is make sure your intervention considers the six health system building blocks. As opposed to having meant, make sure that your intervention properly investigates the features of complex adaptive systems. So it takes into account emergence, self-organization, path dependency. And so because of that, the challenge for systems thinking has been this perception that it is not specific. We stayed at that superficial level because of conflating those two approaches. What have we really meant when we meant systems approach? And so then that comes to this issue that you're raising about this critique, mainly from practice and policymaking, which is a very fair critique because policymakers, decision makers, implementers haven't really had the proof of concept of what systems thinking can do for them in a practical way. And we know that government systems don't incentivize failure. They are biased towards standardization. And so that time that both Don and Tahoud have referred to, the time that it takes to learn from a systems thinking approach, from being wider in scope, from engaging more stakeholders, from thinking in terms of feedback loops, is not always there. And so what we have to do, and Don is speaking to this about, you know, what can we learn moving forward in strengthened health systems post-COVID, is are we going to allow practitioners the time that it takes to actually use systems thinking approaches and learn, looking at consequences, looking at feedback loops. And, you know, just to a final note, which is to say that when you look at examples where it has worked, what you see is that it is very resource intensive. So that then should raise a question for us, which is then what is the scope for systems thinking success in settings where those kinds of resources or that kind of orientation is not there? And how can we nudge those settings to perhaps uptake a little bit more systems thinking? But to respond to the critique, yes, the critique is fair, but those are some of the reasons I think why we face it.
Thank you. Look, I've got the next question and just a slight sort of shift in gear and move back in time. And I just wanted to ask Don and to Greed, what prompted the Alliance to pick systems thinking for its report back in 2008?
Maybe I'll start because I think it goes a little bit back farther than the Alliance for me, at least. And it goes back to I lived in Tanzania for many years working with the Ministry of Health and sort of learning systems with districts of how to plan and manage health better at the district level. And we had a very large experiment over a very large population where districts were allowed to think differently. We didn't talk about systems thinking then, but to think and act differently. The Ministry of Health gave them the freedom to throw away the rule book and do what they thought was most important to do. And these districts started doing things, little things. And I did any individual thing, you would say, this is not going to be consequential. But altogether, it had an enormous effect. People didn't believe this effect. At low cost, we had big impacts on child and adult mortality and use of health services and so on. And it was really hard to explain how these little things did that. And then in 2000, when WHO first conceived or sort of articulated a concept of health systems in the World Health Report 2000, started describing the health system in sort of concrete terms of these, what ultimately became the building blocks. But it was in 2008, which was the 30th anniversary of Alma Ata, the primary healthcare, health for all movement. There was an event to mark the 30th anniversary at the London School. I happened to be there, and Julio Frank was there. And he said there are four revolutions in this 21st century that are going to transform health and health systems. And he listed the four revolutions, and three of them I knew were obvious: biotech revolution, decoding the human genome, the IT revolution of communications, internet connectivity, and so on, and the rise of equity replacing efficiency in the 21st century. But the fourth one, he said, was systems thinking. And at the time, I really didn't know what was that. And I started looking into systems thinking, because anything Julio Frank says, I thought was really important to understand when he was talking about health systems. And that caught me off guard. And so looking at systems thinking, I saw what it was, and it had been applied, of course, in many disciplines, and to some extent had been applied in health, but more at the disease level at the intervention level, at tuberculosis, at tobacco, and so on. But it hadn't been applied to the entire health system, which I thought was odd. And this is what Julio Frank was saying. It's a revolution, and yet this revolution wasn't happening. And that's when Tagreed, who was also actually working with me in Tanzania back 10 years earlier, we knew each other from there. And, you know, the Alliance was getting ready to do this flagship report, and we were looking for a topic. And this is when sort of about systems thinking, where can that take us? And maybe Tagreed, you can pick it up because you were in the Alliance then when we started thinking about the topic and how we're going to tackle a flagship report.
Yeah, it was an amazing time because everything really converged in some way. So the decision for the flagship report of 2009 happens by the Alliance asking its partners what topic would they like. And the topic that most partners chose, more than 60%, was evaluation of health systems interventions. So we started with this, and Don and I, you know, we were working as the editors of this next flagship report, and everything really converged at the same time, because dealing with this, we kept saying, but you can't really evaluate using the usual cost effectiveness. It's more complex than this. What about systems thinking? What is this actually all about? The two of us were saying, we have to see what is this all about, because it might be that that's what we're looking for. And to be honest, in the beginning, when we looked at the we felt that there is something in there, but the topic was so dense and abstract in the literature we have been reading that almost the two of us were saying, we need to have a primer. And, you know, for health systems, we don't have enough at all, even applications. As Don was saying, what we found was on diabetes, on cancer, tobacco, but it was all very disease specific. And we thought there is no way we will go anywhere before we actually simplify this and make it straightforward to anyone so that we can then move on. And that's really how we conceptualized this particular publication. And we really enjoyed working on it because it was such a rewarding to actually unpack all of these complexities.
Yes, and also it was also 2008, the year before, that WHO published the building block articulation of the system, which gave us the substrate to work on. And we actually tried commissioning this flagship report, and we didn't. Everything that came back was so unsatisfying. We said, "Okay, let's just do it ourselves," and put together from our perspective what a primer of systems thinking would say to the Alliance and to the constituency out there that's asking for these materials.
Could I just ask Aku, perhaps your reflections, but also your response to the question of, you know, what's happened in the field since that report's come out, 2008.
I would say that that report really was in some ways a very seminal report, because it really was the first time that systems thinking for health system strengthening had really been introduced. And I know, you know, 10 years later, that report remains one of the most often referenced Alliance materials. And so it still is very much alive, which reflects its continuing value. And I think in the time since the report was published, of course, Tagreed was instrumental in building up the evidence and supporting the generation of evidence around systems thinking in LMIC settings specifically. So there were two supplements that had been supported by the Alliance in 2012 and 2014. The first looking at ideas and strategies of actually implementing systems thinking in LMICs. At that time, most of the examples still were from high-income country settings. And then secondly, a collection around applications of systems thinking approaches and tools and methods also in LMIC settings. And what's been interesting is that actually, when you look at the publications since that time, 2010, colleagues, Chuktai and Blanchette in 2017 did a bibliometric analysis. And you can see exponentially the number of publications increasing for systems thinking in public health. And of course, there were some key publications before that time. So in 2001, the IOM's report on quality in healthcare, and then the BMJ series by Plesk and Greenhalgh and others. But really, 2010 is where you see the increase of publications. But interestingly, most of those publications, as the point was made earlier, have not really been on applications of systems thinking. They have been commentaries, they have been calls for systems thinking, they have been opinions as to why systems thinking still doesn't seem to be, from a practice perspective, gaining traction. And so it tells us that there is still scope for more applications of systems thinking in health policy and systems research, still particularly in LMICs and in low-income settings. In high-income countries, we do see some very nice examples where systems thinking has moved from the more research and has really been seen used in policymaking. But I do think that there's scope for us to continue building and generating that evidence, and particularly, as the point has been made, now that we are trying to strengthen health systems in a context of COVID, the COVID pandemic. We still, various actors within health systems need these skills to think in systems and then the tools to apply them.
Thanks, Aku.
I guess I had a follow-up there, Aku, in terms of there was this initial bit of work on sort of the conceptualization and sort of more vertical disease-specific applications. Can you talk to us a little bit about then the subsequent applications, the sort of maybe more wholesome, more interesting, more thorough, perhaps, applications that really offer lessons for people seeking to understand what systems thinking looks like in practice?
Sure. Maybe to answer the question a little bit differently, I mean, I would give the argumentation for why we still need to understand how we can apply systems thinking. And if we take the SDGs, for example, we know that the SDGs, we refer to them as being indivisible, integrated, and yet we see that we haven't really changed the way we are bringing in our interventions. So we have on one level the idea that we should be integrating our interventions and thinking in systems, and of course, multidisciplinarity, multi-sectoralism, intersectoralism has been since the time of Alma Ata, and yet we still are challenged in actually working multi-sectorally, working intersectorally, and so we have to ask the reasons behind that.
Are there noteworthy examples in your what you call the lean search that you wanted to briefly describe for us, for someone who wants an illustration by example?
I think, you know, like you said, when we're looking for things, sometimes they're there, but we don't see them because they're outside of our normal optics. Mm-hmm. And I think one example is one I've been involved with for the last several years is strengthening civil registration and vital statistics, which is a topic we're wrestling with it now because of all these controversies about mortality in the pandemic and how much is it and what's causing it and so on. But it's a consequence of the fact that in most countries, we don't do a good job of understanding how to document the cause of death. And the reason is it's not just the health sector. It's the Ministry of Justice involved that concerned with identity and civil registration and civil affairs. It's the Ministry of Local Government, usually, which owns the registration points that people need for birth and death registration. It's the Ministry of Finance, which usually has the Bureau of Statistics, which is responsible for statistics. It's the Ministry of Health, which is on the spot when someone's born or someone dies and has to document things. Four or five ministries supposed to work together to make this enterprise work. And so I was invited in to be involved with this because I have big interest in health informatics, which is one sub-building block of the health system. But I said, we have to do systems thinking here. And we had to apply some systems thinking tools. And we just threw one tool in, process mapping, because we found in every country, we worked in 20 countries on this, that in every single country, no one person understood the system from end to end. What happens when there's a plus one birth to a plus one statistic in vital statistics? The whole chain of events across these five ministries was totally unknown to all the actors. And they're just applying process mapping, getting all of these actors in the room at the same time. They had never met each other. They never realized they had these handoffs, they had these obligations, these rules. And they realized how crazy the systems were, how much duplication there was, how many dead ends there were, how much loss there was because the systems were so badly designed because they were put together in the wrong way. And systems thinking, just by saying, okay, we're going to take a systems approach to understanding civil registration and vital statistics systems and not the technical approach, that suddenly everyone started working together, starting having new ideas, re-engineering, and really improving dramatically birth and death registration in the countries which were applying this. I think as an example of just, and to get your toe in the door, one tool. But that tool just was so vivid in making everyone realize their work, that they were part of something bigger. And that the only way this is going to work is if they sort of dissolved some of their traditions and started thinking and working differently. Systems thinking.
That's fantastic. I just realized that in one of my health systems research projects, I have been doing systems thinking because we've been doing process mapping. And I think I'm very struck on by what you said about bringing the different kinds of stakeholders along. I think that sort of the participatory piece is very tricky. It's very difficult, but I think integral to even formulating a strategy to come out of silos. And I think critically also to acknowledge knowledges. So practical knowledge, tacit knowledge, metis, if you will, and bring those to bear and even in understanding the system and acting upon it better or more mindfully, if you will.
Just two points. The first is that, so in your response that, you know, you've been doing systems thinking and you didn't really clock the fact that you were precisely is the point. And so we need to get better at documenting these experiences. But to Dawn's point, you know, I have a lot of examples where systems thinking perhaps has been introduced very discreetly, you know, amongst a management team or where we've trained on particular tools. And what I have seen a lot of times, perhaps, which also speaks to the challenge of why we don't get more systems thinking in the long term, is because what we have often done is trained discreetly people on particular tools, and we haven't worked simultaneously on the system. And so what happens is that people get very excited because they have these new ways of seeing, they have these tools at hand, but it's very difficult to sustain because the environment in which they find themselves will just reject that change. As Dawn said, you know, there's a change, there's some traditions that have to be dissolved. And so I think if we are going to be serious about systems thinking, what we have to do is figure out, how do we not only work with people and capacitate them and, you know, have their minds open to these new possibilities, but simultaneously working on the system so that it is ready to absorb these changes in thinking, these changes in mindset. So then you can sustain over time. And the beauty of Dawn's example is that they are working across multiple government agencies, multiple people, multiple disciplines. And so that really has the potential of greater sustainability. We've been very almost small scale in how we've been approaching systems thinking. And so I think it, you know, is an encouragement to us to think, how do we think more systemically about introducing and sustaining systems thinking approaches?
It seems to me that the participatory approach is a very much large part of systems thinking. And I mean, obviously, there's huge advantages of going down that way. But I also see pitfalls because there's an assumption that everybody's going to pull in the same direction. And, you know, it's obvious in many instances that there's going to be winners and losers and conflicts of interest. And how do we deal with that within a participatory co-production type framework that we often talk about when we're talking about systems thinking?
Well, one of the tools that we use is social network analysis, which is a very, very powerful tool to actually identify who all these stakeholders and actors are, but also to sort of measure their influence on each other. And sometimes our usual approach, which looks at the hierarchies of command and control, which is not systems thinking, is the default. In reality, what's going on is there's individuals who may not be in the obvious mover and shaker, but have the title, are the ones you really need to work on and influence and work with. And so things like social network analysis, which is a classic systems thinking tool, help not only identify, but also help understand the dynamics that are actually operating at this social level and to operate with your eyes open in a much more effective way. So there's a case where understanding the stakeholders, and we're having this as a core competency. And I think systems thinking as a core competency is being taught more and more in schools of public health. And these tools are becoming stronger and stronger over time, that simply having that ability to assess the terrain, if you like, to map out who's who, who's doing what, who influences who has power but is not brought to bear yet on the situation. Because as we know, health systems are very much involved with power dynamics. And most of us are very naive about this. There are these vested interests that don't want that to happen because they benefit from the current inefficiency. And simple tools like social network analysis, which are very easy to apply, open people's eyes, just as process mapping opens people's eyes. And I think that being able to navigate in the system is an important factor in systems thinking allows us to do.
I agree, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I just had a couple of thoughts about the discussion. The first is that, as we've been saying, it's not a lack of tools, it's how we use all array of tools from different disciplines. So process mapping, social network analysis, even causal loop diagrams and system dynamic modeling, these are used, can be actually used in a very linear way as well. You have a question, you answer it, and that's it. The idea about the approach, taking a system thinking approach, is how can one use these tools with a system thinking approach to expand their usefulness to answer questions that are system thinking relevant. So, for example, I remember a study that we've been working with a group from India. It's actually in the 24 supplement in Health Research Policy and Systems. The question was why vaccination for infants in Kerala, why it was reaching such high numbers and not in other states of India. Only by using causal loop diagrams, but really digging into all the different elements, we found out that actually it's the homeopathic medicine people who are sending negative messages about the vaccination that made everyone not wanting to vaccinate their children in these states. And how would you know that? You could just spend your time trying to scale up things, put vaccination campaigns and so on. So this is just the first thought, is that it's not about which tools should I use. It's about what questions, what do I want to know? Is it about the people? Is it about the impact, the influences? The second thought is I wanted to share my own experience in either developing the flagship report and working with different people in the different chapters or in the two supplements we've been working with. It's really a matter of time and wanting to put the time to conceptualize. So you could say, this is my question, and then, but where do I go? So unless the group of people who are trying to answer this question, which can be small, but they need to be a relevant group of people who have enough knowledge to build the idea of what's going on. And these people need to really commit some time. It doesn't have to be long, but they need to really conceptualize, do these, whatever it takes, whether it's mind mapping or even simple diagrams. I found that groups that did this and really tried to understand the issues at hand, they were the most fulfilled, the most exciting in the results. And then it really becomes a matter of maturity or increased awareness of what's going on. Once you do it once, the next time it will be faster and so on. So even with health systems and what can we do intersectoral, I think of this as a snowball approach, where you can start small, making sense within a small team, and your idea will make sense to others because you've done the homework of trying to see, and people will start seeing what you're talking about. And in a snowball approach, eventually you might reach there.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. Look, we're going to wrap up. It's been a fantastic discussion. I really enjoyed it, and look forward to hopefully catching up some other time and maybe discussing further progress, maybe the next 10 years and seeing how systems have progressed then. So once again, thank you for your time, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening. We hope this episode has inspired you to consider the relevance of systems thinking approaches in your work. Make sure you subscribe to Seeing the Full Picture so that you don't miss an episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.